You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost. Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow! Oh, from Brooklyn, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Charlie Davies, Kaylin Carr, David Goss. What's up, boys? It's MLS Unites to get behind fitness and wellness this week. I went for a run the other day, and I can barely sit down. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic. I mean, considering the world's upside down, I'm still coming around, being positive, having fun with my twin boys upstairs. It's another day.
Man, it I wish I was Charlie Davies.
Your social media with the boys is keeping me going right now. Yeah. It's the best content out there in the game.
I thought about putting out some of my own content, but then I was like, nah, I'll just get my kid trained up, and like, this is better than anything that I can possibly do.
The thing about it is, it's like, you know, when you, those like jokes where everyone's always like, oh, if I had a sound, like a movie soundtrack to my life, how great life would be. Like if you had like, you know, some positive reinforcement constantly. Charlie seems to be an MC at all times in his home with his family. So it's like his kids go to do something, and then Charlie all of a sudden, it's like, it's the last 5 minutes. You've got two trains. You've got two trains. Everyone's here for the title. And I'm like, man, yeah. I want to play with trains.
Yeah, those, always. I need more penalty kick content.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
Think about maybe going for MLS in 96, maybe do an old school shootout. MLS shootout.
Okay. That's the evolution. So that's the next step.
I was really worried a kid was going to get drilled in the face, but I figured you wouldn't post it if that happened. So I was safe to keep watching.
Kids bounce back.
Yeah.
Kids bounce back.
They're resilient.
Think about all the times that you got drilled in the face growing up, Dave, and you're still here with us.
Yeah. Nailed it.
By the way, I know we've been remixing all these games. Could we not go back and do ones that have more with the shootouts? Because that's really what I'm here for. There was the I saw Jeff Agus was on the one with you guys and Bill, which Bill Hamid, by the way, what a star. That guy's amazing. Yeah. And Winalda, that was a really good stream. But I wanted to go into like the old school shootouts because Jeff had the most amazing technique where he would lift the ball straight away, like 20, 30 feet in the air, juggle it a couple times, wait for the keeper to come out and either lob him, or if he stayed on his line, he'd smash it. It was brilliant.
He said he got it from NASL. Like he used to go to Dallas Tornado games as a kid, and that, because NASL also had shootouts, and that's where he learned it, which is pretty epic.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically watched Pele play. That's what happened.
By the way, Matt Miazga is coming up. We went straight off the deep end there. So we're going to talk to Matt Miazga about the New York Derby because, of course, today we're doing Mount Rushmore's for the New York Red Bulls and NYCFC. We've had a lot of comments, including from Doyle, who we excluded from this show, that we should do separate Rushmore's for Metro era as well as Red Bulls. We are not going to do that. It's not going to happen. And because we've been skipping it so often, I'm doing the mailbag straight off the top, guys. 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com if you'd rather email. We have an anonymous via the text line that just says, gotta at least mention Santino Quaranta. I assume they're talking about the DC Mount Rushmore, but that was definitely a text without context. Sean Lopez had some issues with our San Jose Mount Rushmore. He says, I honestly can't understand how Lenny did not make the list. Steven Linhart, that is. The best player? No, wasn't that. The best stats? Not even close, but come on. In his 5 years with the club, who else other than Wando energized the fan base and team like Lenny did? Without his personality, they're a different team, a different culture. He brought us the Bash Brothers and the Goonies, and Lenny was the first one to say Goonies never say die. He's arguably the most hated player in league history by other teams and fans, and as such, central to how Quakes fans identify themselves even today, and he's a fan icon because he inspired the Lenny Hair Night, which was just an absolute joy to watch. I wish I could have been there.
And Mount Rushmore is too corporate for some guys. For Lenny, it's like he doesn't want to be on the mountain. And some, I like the idea that some of these guys are club legends.
Yeah,
and you
cult
have to
heroes.
Be in the know to know about them too. If you kind of came across maybe 10 years down the line and you know you looked up at Mount Rushmore, of course you're going to get all those faces and names. But if you really are in the know, you know about these few other guys.
Well said. Well said.
I think Lenny's probably camping somewhere in like the national park that surrounds the Mount Rushmore, right? Like on his own, doing his own thing, exploring his life and
does full and tours for tourists. And then at the end, they're like, hey, we really love this. Like, do you have a badge number so we can like say how much we loved it? And he goes, oh, no, I don't work here. I just, you know, am part of it.
Yeah, I'm just wandering around. Good call there.
Charlie, did you play youth national team or ODP with Santino?
No, he's much older than I am.
Well, not much. Relax, Charlie.
He's like my age, yeah.
Yeah. I've heard unreal stories.
83? Yeah.
He's 35 now. I've heard he was a baller.
No, from everybody, I think it was unanimous. Around 17, he was the guy. I think he was in the same class as Eddie Johnson. Everybody looked to Santino Quaranta around the globe. They thought of U.S. youth national team. For his age group, it was Santino Quaranta. He could strike with both feet. He was quick. He was athletic, great touch, technique. Even with my time at DC United spent with him, I was always impressed with his ability to strike a ball. He was so clean, great technique, and he was one of the best guys that I've played with in the locker room. We're talking about a locker room guy, a culture guy. He was a big part of that at DC United.
Similar to Lenny, as far as you kind of have to be in the know mm-hmm. for like a supporter's Mount mm-hmm. Rushmore.
Yeah, it's hard to know if you're the real deal. If you say Santino and they don't say Quaranta, then you know they don't know.
Right.
William from Dallas, he liked the loathed 11 we put together, but he is apoplectic that we didn't feature Blas Perez there. Super Raton.
I mentioned his name.
We also gave you full chance to talk, Charlie. He gave you full opportunity to lay out your 11.
Wow.
We didn't even know. You got off that call so fast. Charlie had physically written out a formation with a full loathed 11.
Yeah.
Wow. It's
facts.
Here's some other names that came out. Matt Reese came out. People didn't like him. They said if they're on the other team, Bill Hamid was in there as far as goalkeepers, which I didn't have. Walter Zenga. I had a couple people text me that. People who played against him.
He was one of the coolest dudes out there. He wore backwards fitted. Like, are you kidding me?
I don't think other people liked him outside of New England, Charlie. I'm just going to throw that at you. Joe Cannon got a vote there. So did Bobby Shuttleworth. Josh Wicks. There's a throwback. Josh Saunders did. And then here's a good one I thought was a good future play. David Ochoa with Real Salt Lake. And then the other names we missed. Carlos Ruiz, Clint Dempsey, Mamadou Diallo, Kyle Beckerman, Troy Dyack. That was a good one. Kaylin, I know you know something about that.
Oh, God. I'm terrified. Yeah, Troy Dyack once told me he was going to kick my head off when I was in college. I was playing against those Quakes with Jeff Agus, and I had no idea how to slide tackle anybody. So, you know, striker. And so I just went, and mind you, I'm at Berkeley. He's with this Quakes team that's like legit. When they won the championship 2003 that same year. And I go in and I'm like trying to, you know, and I'm trying to show out because there's Dom and Frank Yallop on the sideline. And I like go in slide tackle, but I show my studs because I don't really know how else to slide tackle, I guess. And I got the ball, but he was not happy. Next play, I go and like the ball bounces and I go to head it and he kicks me like straight in my chest. And I don't think he was aiming there. And next time I'm jogging back and set piece and he's like, next time that's going to be your head. And I was like, oh.
I'm still afraid of that guy. We talk about the loathed 11, right? It's not just dirty players. It's dirty players, but guys you want to play with. Mm-hmm. So like for me, Ozzie Alonso was a player who talked trash to me on the field. Like a lot of guys didn't like him, but I would love to play with him because he's one of those guys. Michael Bradley, same kind of thing. I hate playing against him. Because he's one of those players who gets all over the place. He likes to talk trash. But when I played with him in the U.S. men's national team, one of the best players to play with because of that mentality, that fight, that he wants to not only beat you physically, but mentally.
Like, my guy like that
players
was,
I want to play with.
My guy like that was Jay Heaps. And he was just – I mean, first of all, he's a Duke guy, so it's easy to hate anybody who went to Duke, mm-hmm. right? It's like he had that kind of like Christian Leitner – All-American, you know, played on the basketball team type thing. But he was so good where you would, if you thought you had space, he would sometimes jump you a little bit early and throw off your rhythm a little bit. And sometimes you'd sit off. You never quite knew what he was going to do. But he was just a really tough defender. So I always hated him, but kind of similar to the way Charlie's describing, like out of respect.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Aurelian Colin made this list. Some suggestions. Jimmy Nielsen jumped on here. Nick Garcia. That was a good throwback. I'd heard stories about Nick Garcia in like Kansas City indoor leagues, just crushing people and talking trash. Will Johnson, Cuauhtemoc Blanco got in here. And then Jay Weiss hit us up on Twitter and said he got the chance to play against Stoichkov in an indoor over 30 league. Also, he sent off Dima Kovalenko in an over 40 indoor game last year. So Dima Kovalenko still
keep it
doing
strong,
his thing.
Dima.
And last one here before we get moving. Shannon hit us up a while ago asking about MLS books, looking for a recommendation or two to learn about the league, about the development of the league, or the history here. I think there's probably three, and if you guys have another one, throw them in there. Long-range goals by Baudur is a big one. Phil West wrote The United States of Soccer, another good one. And then The Beckham Experiment by Grant Wall is sort of the most well-known and has a ton of insider information and really gives you a look at where MLS was before Beckham and where it was with Beckham and a little bit in the aftermath, too. Plus, the drama is pretty good as well.
Got to give it up for Bobby, right? Got to give Bobby's book a shout.
That's true. We've promoted that book so many times on this show that I almost forgot. When the dream became reality. Bobby Warshaw.
There's a bunch of good ones out there. I'm trying to think if there's...
So can I throw out... There's one called Star Spangled Soccer. And it was about how the 94 World Cup came about, got marketed, got created, but it goes into how it laid out MLS. And anyone on Twitter, get on Twitter and get down Evan Ream's throat and make him finish his book and publish it, because he's giving me some sneak peeks on some chapters and it's awesome. It's got history. It's got why Sacramento's a soccer city, all this stuff. But he's, you know, taking
that's
his
set
time
in Sacramento.
It's all about Sacramento's rise. And
it's about Sac Republic, but it goes back all. He has chapters that go back to the history of soccer in the area, the formation of the team, how it got rolled out, how it's been successful, all that stuff. It's great.
Hit us up 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. We are killing time just like you are. We hope we're entertaining you, but you are definitely entertaining us on Twitter and in the mailbag as well. Remember, MLS Classics Remix, the first New York Derby, is going down on Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern. YouTube, Facebook, MLS's channels on both of those.
Caleb Remix.
Yeah. Susanna Collins, Alexis Guerreros, Dax McCarty, and Chris Wingert are doing that one. All right, time now for an AT&T call to the field. We're chatting with Matt Miazga about the New York Derby and so much more. Matt, what's up, man? Welcome to Extra Time.
How are you guys? Thanks for having me.
Let's just start with the obvious. You know, we're all in our bedrooms or in Dave's case, his kitchen. Where are you? Where are you weathering this COVID-19 pandemic?
I'm in my living room in Reading, England. So I'm in England right now. So that's where I'm at.
Just tell me how it is. Give us a feel. We're all, it's, I guess, Kalen's moved on.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to say, really. I mean, obviously, it's a difficult period for everyone, for the whole world, essentially. And I have my thoughts about it. I mean, I just think that it's good to just see and look at different outlooks and perspectives, not just what the mainstream media is looking at. But at the end of the day, it's a difficult moment for everyone. And I hope it gets resolved fairly soon. And hopefully everyone gets healthy and we can, you know, resume back to normality. So we'll see how it goes.
How are you staying fit?
I have a few parks around me, so I've been going to the parks. I have a ball. I have a couple of bands, a couple of weights, so I take them all to my car, bring it to the park, and just get creative, use my mind a little bit, and do some running, do some ball work, and just trying to just pinpoint little weaknesses in my game and just do things and work on them, try to get uncomfortable. I mean, I know it's uncomfortable doing it, but day by day, I'm getting better and better and more comfortable. For example, my left foot. Some sessions, I just go to the park and just strictly just use my left foot, nothing else. And now I'm obviously getting more.
Who you passing to though? Like, who, you're just kicking it and then running, or?
I have a couple of things that replace cones and then use cone, those kind of things, and just dribble, juggle, just use my imagination, kind of. So
that's old school.
But yeah. So I've been keeping fit. I've been keeping sharp, obviously. I have my backyard as well, so if it's bad weather or something, I'm just in the back and just doing my thing. So, I mean, it's not really affected me in terms of fitness. I've just used it as a time for self-improvement and just stay sharp.
When you say imagination, what do you mean? Because when you say imagination and you say I'm practicing by myself, I think of myself in my backyard, like counting down the final seconds Yeah. Are you back there like, all right, it's the promotion playoffs. Matt Miazga comes up. Is he rising for the header?
Nah, obviously those are more right before I go to bed. But just game situations, obviously, like turning with my, like, if I'd pop the ball up in the air and I'd imagine there's an attacker coming to try to just to get it from me. And I'll try to turn out with it, control it, and kind of just open my body just to be like little things like that, obviously. And then running is difficult. Nobody likes to aimlessly run, but you got to do what you got to do. And sometimes I just kind of like imagine me sprinting down like 90th minute, you know, sprinting down the field from a corner kick and just to get by. So I survived somehow.
What's the club situation like for you right now, Matt? I know you're on loan with Reading, still with Chelsea. How does this affect that? Oh, I'm sorry, buddy. Say hi. Yeah, they'll find the walruses. Shut the door, please. Shut the door.
No respect.
That's sorry about that. Yeah. There's no locks on the doors. No locks on the doors in this apartment, which is bizarre, but whatever.
Mm-hmm. So, it's tough to gauge really, because I was hoping the season, you know, we're still continuing the season on. We're just in the right form for ourselves, and obviously you guys know the championship is a very unforgiving league where a couple results can go your way, a couple results can't go your way. You win a couple games and you're back in the thick of things, and we're only 8 points off of the last playoff spot with 9 games left. So obviously it's a difficult task when you think about it, but it's definitely doable. It's happened before, and I think we were on a nice little run. If we could have continued that momentum, who knows what happened. So that was the goal in the back of my mind, is to come back originally to Reading for this season and to try to help get promoted. And then whatever case, and then we'll see what happens. And but obviously now there's a pause in the league, so we don't really know. But at the end of the day, I'm open to everything. I'm a bit older now. I'm not, you know, 21, 22, where I can go out on loan and, you know, and I was alone at the time, and I have my missus with me. So I'm trying to kind of, as I get older, settle down and see the next step. But we'll see what happens. I feel like this season was the decider of it all, because there's only 9 games left. And if we can make the playoffs and get promoted, that would have been great. And I still believe we can do that. Obviously, we'll see when the season resumes, if it does. And then we'll go from there.
Is there a thought process still to, after this, go back to Chelsea?
Yes and no. Obviously I think of the positives and I think of negatives as well. I mean, I don't have a problem going out and going somewhere else, but also in the back of my head, I always want to, you know, kind of finish what I started in the beginning when I first went there. I want to, you know, get in there and make the name for myself that I was originally supposed to out there. And we'll see what happens. Obviously I know it's a difficult task. They have a lot of good players. And I'm a bit older now, but you never know what can happen. You have a good, you know, everybody looks at the championship now for players, and Frank Lampard now is the manager, and obviously they took a lot of players from the championship last year who've done well, so you never know.
You signed for Chelsea. The expectations are high for you, but you come into a locker room with all these big-time players, right, veterans. Yeah. What were your expectations? How long did you think or expect to for it to take before you broke in to that team?
Yeah. So originally when it all, you know, transpired in January of 2016, I knew obviously, you know, it's a situation and an opportunity I can't turn down. I was really confident at the moment. I was playing really well in MLS. We were winning, and I was young, and obviously I had a contract situation in MLS where I was able to finally make that step to Europe, and Chelsea came calling. So me going in there, I wasn't expecting, you know, to hit the ground running and obviously playing every game. I realized there's a situation. There was 3 center backs ahead of me. I think at the time it was Zuma, Cahill, and Terry. And I was coming in as a fresh 20-year-old from MLS. I knew that I had to take my time and work my way in. And that was my mindset going in. And obviously there was an interim manager at the time, which was Gus Hiddink. And I knew that in the summer there was going to be a new manager. So I thought, you know, let me just get through this first half and with the first team and then see where it takes me. Obviously, there was a couple injuries and I got my chance one game. Then I made my debut, done really well. And the second game wasn't my best game, but you kind of get blamed for like half a mistake on one of the goals. And you're on a yellow card and you're young and you get and you're quote unquote American, I think that cloud is always hovering, and you get subbed out at halftime and then you never see the pitch again. And then you just make the bench a few times. And then I'm 20 years old in Chelsea. I'm thinking, oh, well, it's not what I hoped for, but it was what it was. And I'll just wait for the summer. So that was my mindset going in it. I thought at the time it all was going well. I thought I'd just ease my way into the environment, the Premier League, the standard. And I got a couple games and yeah, came into the summer of 16, new manager. And then obviously I'm still young and he wants experience. So that was the thought process of going on loan now and getting experience.
You went to the Netherlands, Matt, and that went pretty well. But I've always been curious, just because there were so many reports and so many different things coming out of France, with what happened there, because you were in the team and then you were out of the team and then you were just gone.
Yeah, it's that whole situation was very interesting, to be fair. But yeah, so I originally went to Nantes. There was a new manager that they just hired that wanted to, you know, kind of change the culture of their playing style. He was young, Portuguese manager, Miguel Cardoso, and he wanted me as well as the sporting director and the president. So I think it was after we played France with the USA right before their World Cup. We did well. I had a good season with Vitesse, played Europa League, and then I played a good game against France, and that's when a lot of French clubs were interested in me. So I made the decision to go to Nantes because I think, you know, France just won the World Cup. League One was an upcoming league. You see a lot of players who do well there, make the next step to a big club in the Premier League or a big club in Europe. And I went in there, obviously starting every game, playing. We weren't getting results, but I thought that was some of the best football of my career. The 7 games that I played, 8 games, we weren't getting results. And Nantes, you know, the owner is very... is demanding results. So he sacked that new manager he just brought in after 10 games. So that happened. New manager came in, kind of like an old school Yugoslavian manager. And the first game, we only had 3 sessions. The first game we played Bordeaux, and that was my first game back. That was my first game with him. And what could have went wrong. We ended up losing 3-0. I made a mistake for the second goal, where I was a mishap with the goalkeeper. He played me a ball, made a miscontrol and took it and scored. And then the third goal, I committed a PK. So that all happened. We lost the game. And then it was an international break. And he told all their national players, just because he started, he just got there. He doesn't want all the international players going. But obviously, I'm going to go with the international for an international break. Like, it's an opportunity to represent your country. And I'm just trying to establish myself as a U.S. national team player. So I went. So I was gone for a week and a half. When I came back, I had yellow card accumulation, so I was suspended for that game. We ended up winning that game. And then I was like, all right, like, this is football. Like, I'm probably going to see the bench. Like, I'm probably going to see the bench now. Like, you're going to keep the winning team. You just got there. I was away. My last game wasn't very good, so fair play. This is like November. So I said, okay, I'll just work my way back in. I know my qualities. I know what I've done before. I have my credit. But I played the good games before. And then he kind of just like exiled me right away. I don't know why. He didn't even put me on the bench anymore. He was just like, I was training well. He asked me a few times to play with the reserve match just to stay fit. So obviously I was a good professional. I didn't need to because I was playing so much already. Like, I'm fit. So I said, okay, I'll do that. I'll stay professional. And then December hit, I was training well. Nothing was happening. And then the Chelsea starts calling, not starts calling me, what's happening, what's going on. Then they come, they speak with the manager because they have a nice little loan department set up. They have a good structure and a good method about how it all goes about. So a couple coaches from Chelsea came back from the loan coaches and they had a chat with the manager and the directors and saying, what's going on? You know, how can you just exile him just like that? He had his reasoning. Like, he just said that, you know, I'm picking these guys ahead of him, and that's what it was. And I think it all culminated with me being on loan, me leaving at the end of the season, obviously me having bad games, the last game, me being away, and then they're winning, so I can't really say anything. But then there was a period when they started losing, and their defenders were making similar mistakes that I was making. You know, they were losing bad games, and then I still wasn't getting my chance. So I was like, all right, it is what it is. I'm just going to keep working. January rolled around, and in the back of my mind, I was ready to leave. There was a couple clubs wanting to take me on loan for the rest of the season. And then Nantes didn't want to let me go for some reason. And Chelsea was telling Nantes, like, if you're not going to play him, we have other clubs. He's ready to go. And they kept waiting it out. And at the time, I had an injury. So what happened was Chelsea told me to come back to examine. So whenever you have an injury as a loan player, you have to go back to Cobham, to Chelsea, to get it checked out. Because I was out of training a little bit. So I went back. And I remember there was a report saying that they didn't know, but they knew. I told the president, the sporting director, and the assistant coaches. I didn't speak with the manager because I didn't have his number at the time, but I spoke with the sporting director and the owner and told them I'm going back. And they said, okay, fine. That's great. Get checked out. And then we'll see what happens. So all that, what I remember in the media at the time, they were saying that, like, I just left. That was not true. I got permission from the top hierarchy. Then I guess that manager was fed up with the situation. So he's like, all right, like, we'll let him go on loan. That's fine. We'll let him leave because he didn't originally, I was third choice center back at the time. I was making the bench, but he wasn't playing me and they were losing. And he didn't want to let me go. And he finally let me go. And there was a few clubs that were interested. And the whole situation for me was, there were some good clubs in the top five leagues. But I wasn't going in there to play right away and be a starter until the end of January. So I can't waste more time just trying to work my way in. And what if I do get in? Yep. I'll have, what, 6-7 games. If I don't get in, I can be on the bench or not play for another 5 months. And I needed to play because I missed two valuable months of not playing. So then Reading, the opportunity was Reading. I was going to go in there, play all the games. The manager really wanted me. So that's what happened. And yeah, obviously, when I look back, France was it didn't work out the way I wanted it to. But in hindsight, I look back and I think of all the people I met, you know, the experiences I got to live in France. I was learning the language, you know, it was different experience.
I've been there before. Trust me, I know. It's
yeah,
it's
you were,
tough.
Yeah, you were in France too.
Did
yeah.
you speak to Bedoya before going to Nantes?
Yeah, I spoke with Alejandro before, actually, because he texted me and said that because they were trying to, obviously, when they're recruiting a player, they're trying to get, like, background info of how he's the person and all that. So they obviously asked, I think the directors asked Bedoya about me, and he said some good things about me. So that kind of just...
How much did you pay him? Did you pay him?
but yeah, so I enjoyed France. Like, I can't really say anything bad about France. I really enjoyed it. I wish it went longer. You never know in the future if I can go back, but yeah. it is what it is, and I'm a better man and a better player from it. So
let's talk, though. Let's take it back to the good old days. Let's talk Clifton, baby. Let's get Jersey strong for a second.
Yeah.
Because we brought you on because we're talking Red Bulls and Metrostar history today on the show. We're going to talk about the greatest players, the best teams, the best groups, the most important coaches. But you were there for some of the biggest moments because you were there early in the NYCFC Red Bull rivalry. And when that all started, you've got your celebration. What do you remember about that rivalry starting? What do you feel when you watch the current games or, you know, clips go up about the old games that you played in?
Yeah, I remember 2015 is when I really established myself. So I remember that there was a huge buzz about New York City FC, you know, David Villa, you know, Lampard coming in, Pirlo coming in. And obviously we were New York Red Bulls. Obviously we play in New Jersey, but we were the only team in the tri-state area at the time. And it kind of like rubbed us off the wrong way where everybody, you know, I remember seeing fans, you know, leaving Red Bull and going to support New York City FC, and that obviously rubbed us off in the wrong way. So when that rivalry ended up coming to fruition and playing the first few games, I don't think that first year in 2015, I don't think it was replicated because the Red Bull Arena and Yankee Stadium were both sold out. We played them three times. I remember we played Red Bull Arena twice and Yankee Stadium, and they're sold out all the time, no problem. Now I see like Red Bull has like little like red corners and it's not always full and all this, and even Yankee Stadium. So at the time, I remember the buzz was huge. And I think I remember like for us in that locker room, like we're like, this is the biggest game. Like imagine starting a rivalry and losing the first few games or the first game, like how bad would that rub off on the fan base and mentally as well. So when you go into those games, like we had to win, like it doesn't matter how
you put a hurting on them. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me about the origin of the home run swing. Like, when did you know you were going to do that? When did that celebration materialize? Have you ever swung a bat before? Because got to tell you, your form.
Like I did,
yeah,
right?
Your form needed a little work.
It's more like a golf swing, but so I remember Felipe Martins. Where does he play now? He didn't play in New York, DC. So Felipe at the time, we were, I think it was a few days before training. I think we were just joking around in the changing room. We sat by each other and he said, like, if whoever scores or one of us scores, like, we have to do the celebration. We have to do it, like, for the banter or whatever. So obviously we're like, yeah, we're laughing about it, obviously. And then I remember Felipe, they kept saying leading up to it, like, we're going to do it. Obviously, I didn't know I was going to score. I mean, I'm going to try to score, but my job is to do a clean sheet. And then I remember it happened. I scored. Obviously, adrenaline was running like crazy. And then I remember telling Felipe, like, let's go do the celebration. Like, I just remembered, let's go do the celebration. Like, originally, I was telling him, like, you take the ball, like a fake ball, and fake pitch it to me, and then I'll hit it. But he wasn't catching on. Like, he wasn't catching on. So I remember we both went and ran up to our fans, like, around, what is it called, the baseball?
Home plate? Thing?
Not home plate, but just, like, that area. Like, where the...
Infield? The grandstand?
Yeah, the infield.
Baseball guy.
So, because I scored the other end, and the infield was the other end. So we ran to the infield, looked at our fans, and then I saw him, like, just starting to do this. So I'm like, nah, bro, like, throw me the ball and I'll hit it. He wasn't doing it. So I'm like, all right, like, let me just do my own thing. So I just went to go, like, obviously, like do a fake bat. And then I don't know if they saw it. And then
center backs usually don't celebrate goals, which I'm all about. When you do it good, I love celebrations.
Yeah.
Speaking of celebrations, was there ever a player you played against that did a celebration that just annoyed you, that got under your skin? Because I know we had some epic battles, and there's my first goal for the New England Revolution.
I remember playing against you, man, and you gave me a tough time. I don't remember. I don't know. I don't remember really any, like.
What about, like?
I'm not sure, really. I do remember a few games in the past, like, where obviously, like, I'm talking smack with someone and, like, they end up scoring and, like, they run by me and, like, say something, or, like, the next play.
Did anybody ever do, like, a matador?
Wait, what happened in this matchup between you two?
Sorry, say that again?
I want to hear what happened in this matchup between you two. Take me into that.
Was there a matador done, a certain celebration? You know, one of us is really known for it.
Was there a matador celebration? I don't know.
I don't remember. By the way, you're speaking.
No, I was saying I was always impressed with – you came onto the scene. I remember 2014. It was like, I want to say it was the first time I saw you play. We played against you. I scored my first goal for the Revs. It was like a deflected cross that came to me. You got a red card because you took out Lee around. But I was so impressed with how confident you were in your mentality. You had like an old school approach. It was like, talk trash. You know, you're physical, but you were athletic as well. Mm-hmm. And you just continued to get better and progress. How have you improved your game since you've left MLS?
I think I've improved in every facet, if I'm honest with you. Every facet, especially, like, I realized the most important thing. I was working with a lot of managers. I'm very happy and grateful that I worked with a lot of different managers over these past 4 or 5 years with different nationalities, different philosophies, and different ways of approaching the game. So I learned that's very important, that my job, the most important time for my job is to be when we have the ball, when we're in our attacking third. What am I doing to organize everybody, my back line, my defensive midfielder in front of me, or my number eight, that if we do lose the ball, how good can we be where there's no counterattack? They're not able to build that. They're not able to break our pressure, that we can catch them there and continue to suffocate them and try to score a goal. So I learned that, like, my vision in trying to, like, organize the defense and the team, and my leadership skills in terms of communication and demanding my players and my teammates, that had to be spot on. So I'm not perfect at it, but I'm still trying to learn. I'm still trying to keep going at it, keep trying to perfect it. And I think that was what really set me apart. Obviously, I've analyzed a lot, and I was happy because Eddie Newton was working at Chelsea at the time, and he worked with me when I was on loan in Vitesse, and he would come every month and a half, and we would do video analysis and try to. You guys all right? Because someone was calling me. Sorry.
Yeah. We got you.
Oh, no, I don't hear you guys.
Uh-oh.
No.
You guys hear me?
Yeah.
I don't hear you guys. Can you speak? Can you
say something? Hello, hello?
I don't hear you.
Should we just try to go back in and finish the show?
My mom was FaceTiming.
Dang, Mom. Come on, Mom.
What's up, Matt? Can you hear us?
Whoa.
Sorry, guys.
I'm all good.
Listen.
Tell her to get in the group chat. Let's go. Let's
Polish go. Mom, man. They can't give you any space. That's the rule.
Look, it's quarantine, dude. From New Jersey, she's just trying to make sure you're okay.
I've been FaceTiming so much the past 3-4 weeks. I FaceTime everyone. That's not contact. But should I continue on what I was
saying? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. So obviously, every year and every season I was at, I just learned so much about myself and about the game. And obviously there's so much to learn, and that's what I'm willing to do. I'm just willing to learn and trying to be the best I can be. Cause I have my goals. I'm confident in myself that I can reach those goals, and now I'm going to keep doing it until I physically can't. So for me, it's just about, you know, taking each training session, each game, one game at a time, and trying to be the best. And then wherever it takes me, it'll take me. So that's about it.
You're a big part of Red Bull's history, even if your time maybe wasn't as long as some others. We're doing this thing with every club, Matt. We're doing Mount Rushmores for each club. So the four like most important players in the history of Red Bulls / Metro Stars, who would they be for you? Who would you put on the Mount Rushmore? Are there any just obvious names? Like, this guy's a lock.
Thierry Henry. I'll play to Thierry.
All right, that's one
Bradley
of the four.
Bradley Wright Phillips.
Two of the four. We got Thierry. We got BWP.
Oh, you guys have your own?
No.
We're going to do our own.
We did our own. Okay. But we're waiting for
Bradley Wright Phillips, Thierry Henry. Metro Stars?
You can go Metro Stars. So you could throw in, like, you know, Savarese.
I would say Luis Robles. Luis Robles has to be in there.
All right. Okay. One more left.
And you could go Dax. You could go Sasha. You could go
Juan Pablo Angel.
You could go Amado Guevara.
That's a good shout. The thing is, for me, I'm looking at, like, I'm not looking too far back, because like when I was younger, I wasn't really looking at Metro Stars. It's only like since I hit the Red Bull Academy when I was younger is when I like kind of not idolized them, but like looked up to them because I wanted to get there. And I remember Angel being a big deal at the time. So that was a good shout. Dax would have been in there if he had years in him.
This is yours, man. You could throw Dax in there. You could take Juan Pablo.
No. He traded him. No respect there.
It's difficult. I'd probably put Angel or Dax. Dax at the time, you know, from what was it, 2012, 2016, he was like kind of the face of the franchise in terms of everybody knew. Obviously, Dax was like a MLS vet, and like he was always there. He was always playing games. He was always in the mix. But I remember when I was younger, Angel was a big deal. Like when I was like young and we would like go into the first team training. And I remember he was there. It'd be like, oh, guys. So I'd probably put on hell.
All right. Right now,
if I'm on the spot, those are my four.
That's a good one. Before we let you go, I do have to ask you one more question. And I'm just trying to look on my notes here what that question's going to be about. Oh, Diego Lainez. How did that happen? Did you plan that one, or was that just banter in the moment? And how often do you hear about that now? I mean, it's just like it's a marquee moment for you.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously didn't plan it. It just happened. It just occurred how it occurred. What can I say? one, I mean, I've done worse things than that in games, man. I've said worse things in games than that. So I'm not. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, what stays on the field stays on the field. After the game, I'll shake his hand or I'll shake someone's hand. I mean, I don't really care. Like if like you're my teammate and you know me, like when we're in the game, when it's game, like I don't really care about anything. Like I'm going in there like to knock your head off. Like I want to win at all costs. And like, if I'm gonna talk trash, like I'm gonna talk trash. And I think talking trash is kind of like instilled in me, like growing up in New Jersey, and like just it's just like I don't know. That's how we talk to each other. You guys can probably like I don't know if you guys attest to that. But yeah, at the moment, I remember we're playing Mexico. It was a rivalry. Like there's adrenaline always, and yeah, I remember like he just stepped to me, so I was like what are you doing, like. So then we just started talking. Obviously, we don't understand what he's saying. And then I just did it. I just did that. The only regret I have with it, I prolonged it too much. I should have just stopped, because when I thought about it, I was on yellow card. So like, imagine the referee just got triggered and was like, all right, get this guy out of here. Then I would have been, it would have been really foolish. So yeah, it was what it was. I mean, I respect my opponents. I respect everyone, but I'm gonna go in there and do what I have to do to try to win the game, or kind of mess up your mentality or your mind. So it happened, and then they ended up getting sent off, and we ended up winning the game. So
hey, worked out. Had you gotten sent off, that would have been a memory that you would maybe not want to talk about.
It would have been bad.
All right, man. Thank you so much for hanging out with us here and just sharing some stories. Good luck, Matt. Appreciate your time, dude.
Yeah. Stay safe.
Yeah, pleasure, guys. Take care. And stay safe. Stay well.
Big thanks to Matt Miazga for joining us. Hope he gets in touch with his mom. That's very important in these times. Remember, check out the new MLS in 96 Instagram account. Pretty cool stuff. I've been enjoying that. And the call-up's still doing their thing. Just like we are, they got some great Joseph stories out of Brad Guzan. Now let's get to our Mount Rushmores for this Monday? Thursday. Yes, this Thursday, as well as the MLS team of all time for the 25th season. Got to remember to get those as well. And let's start with the Red Bulls. This is going to be hard. We're not going to split it up. There's not going to be Metro and Red Bulls. You heard what Matt Miazga had to say. And Charlie, I've been told that you did a lot of prep work.
I did a lot of prep work.
So walk us through what you got, man. What are you thinking? Right.
So we talking top coach, Jesse Marsh. Give it to him. Bop. All right. He's got top coach. Now, first person etched in stone, BWP. All right. So Bradley Wright Phillips, 171 games played, top goal scorer, 106 goals, 24 assists. Etch him in. Bop, 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 bop. Next, Luis Robles. Because he has 205 games played. The ultimate pro, etch him in.
Ding, 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 okay. ding.
Now we're getting into some dicey territory, because people have a lot of different opinions. For me, etch in stone.
Lift it up.
Okay.
That's a game. That's a game worn, huh? That's
game worn. Oh. 2011. Okay, 2011, game worn, my first time meeting my idol. We exchanged jerseys after the game. Thierry Henry, 51 goals, 42 assists, 122 games played, and best 11 three times. Okay, best
Chuck, 11. You, no Etch respect to frame it? I mean, what's the deal? I mean, you got that thing on a hanger?
I'm going to frame. I'm waiting because I have a couple of guys. I got to prioritize who I'm going to frame. And
who else is up there?
He's on the Mount Rushmore, but maybe not Chuck's wall.
Yeah, Charlie, who else is ahead of him on the frames?
Got to work your way up.
Who would be ahead of Henri?
No one's ahead of him. I have Kaká, Zlatan.
Are they up on the wall?
No, no one else is up on the wall.
Okay.
I'm taking my time with these.
Okay. Charlie, we'll get you your fourth here.
But the only reason this one is on the wall is because it's autographed by all the guys that I played with. Okay. So that's why it's so special to me. Okay
Charlie, I'm gonna send you some wooden hangers, because the wire hanger, come on,
yeah,
bro.
For that's sure, disrespectful, man.
Okay, yeah, fine. Okay.
That thing, like, that's right. That thing's,
you just
straight
get that
from,
thing dry clean.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, straight from the dry cleaners.
Just all right, enough. Okay,
wait, can I just throw one more in with Henri? Also won the first major trophy for the team.
Okay, great.
The Emirates Cup.
You're right. Fourth. This is when people are going to start fighting, okay? You can go with Juan Pablo Angel, 58 goals scored, 14 assists, 102 games played. So he has played enough games to warrant a chance to be on that Mount Rushmore. Not on mine. Clint Mathis, 39 goals, 23 assists, 93 appearances. Again, enough to warrant a face on Mount Rushmore. Not on mine. Pab Ramos, a lot of people say, sentimental, was a big-time national team player. 8 goals, 36 assists, 112 games played. Could be there. Not on mine. Mike Pecky, this is a club legend. 169 games played. Coached for the club. I mean, he's ingrained. He grew up there, local guy, all about it. Probably has a tattoo, Red Bull tattoo, or Metro Stars tattoo on his body. Not on mine. You could go Amado Guevara, the only MVP in club history. Not on mine. I'm going to go with Dax McCarty. 169 appearances, so he's tied with Pecky as far as games played for the club. Captain, he was a leader. During those years, you could depend on him. He was consistent. He really grabbed the attention of the supporters and the players. You felt like he was living, breathing, being a part of that franchise, that club. And so for me, those are the top four. That's who you got to go with. I know people are going to say, Tony Meola. He had 125 games played for the club, but his MVP season was with KC. And when I think of Tony Meola and MLS, I think of Kansas City. So Red Bull fans, that's my top four. That's my Mount Rushmore for your club. And I think I have a good shot at being the legit four.
So there are no Metro Stars in that group. How do you feel about that, Dave? Is that the right decision? Because they didn't win anything. The teams weren't.
I don't see a difference. I don't understand why people. Because we had this from a few different people of like, you have to split them. And I asked a few friends who are Red Bull fans and have been season ticket holders for years. And they were like, oh, is this Metros and Red Bulls? It's like, why are you thinking about them differently? Like, we did San Jose, who had two name changes. Then the team left. Then you got a new team and we combined all of that and it made sense. And yet for some reason, people think a name change from one day to the other really changes the history in any way. Like they continued to play at Giant Stadium when they became the Red Bulls. It was the same group of players. You know, John Wolanek was the same part of it. Like all those are the same. I do disagree. I would put one on. The jersey behind me is Amado Guevara, only MVP in Red Bull history. In my mind, and this probably is a lot of it is personal, is from MLS 1.0, where you had, you know, Donadoni and you had Ramos allocated to the team. Those were your stars. And you mentioned Tony Meola, who did more things with other teams, also left, came back, that whole thing. From MLS 1.0 to the JPA years, Guevara was the bridge. He was the star. He won MVP. He's the only person to win MVP. And when I started going to games and when I used to go to games, he was the guy people came to see. And he was the one that engaged the community. And he was the one that, you know, the whole Latin community was there to watch. And he was the star and he was fun. So in my mind, it's Amado Guevara. If you're going to take anyone out of that era. And the problem with the Red Bulls, the problem with the Metro Stars is they traded everyone. They got people from other teams and they sent people to other teams. That's why Pecky is so hard. That's why Tony Meola is so hard. That's why Dax is hard now. It's not just the current iteration. It's the way it's been since 1996. So my fourth is Guevara. I respect people picking Pecky. I respect people picking Dax as well. But that's the one that I go with.
Mm-hmm. Why did you not pick Mike Pecky? Tell us why. Kaylin, where do you stand on this?
This is a tough one. I think Juan Pablo Angel, to me, was my initial shout because he was just, he was a fantastic player. And just as far as like quality goes, he was like an incredible striker in MLS. And I think he also was a part of the team that went to the only MLS Cup, right? Yeah, I understand that was sort of a strange of the teams that have gone to MLS Cup or that have gotten close. Like that was probably not the best team to actually get over the hump to do it, but credit to them. And I think of that era, especially Juan Pablo Angel was magic. The goals he scored, the way he scored them, He was the club all-time leading goal scorer until Bradley Wright Phillips really kind of came out of nowhere and then became the sort of MLS legend and club legend that he has become. But I end up going back to a little bit of, and then the other side I had was Dax, and Dax is like, I have a little bit of trouble of having Robles, Dax, and BWP, and no Sasha Kljestan on that team, because I look at that nucleus of the group and it feels harsh to leave one person out. So
longevity, that's why longevity.
Yeah.
That's the only reason you can leave Sasha out, because Mount Rushmore for Chivas USA, guess who's up there? Sasha Kljestan. And he's like, okay, you know, but you're talking about Dax. He was there much longer than Sasha. That's why Dax would get the nod over Sasha, even though Sasha had an unbelievable season. You can't rule out the length of time that Dax McCarty had with the club.
Yeah, I agree with that, and it's just, yeah, I don't know. I'm really torn between the two. If I'm going to look up at the you know, the busts of all of them, I think I'm gonna still have to go with Juan Pablo Angel, and I think that leaves Dax just out, which is feels just wrong, but but yeah, that's it. I can't take Henri off the list. I can't take Bradley off the list, and Robles I can't take off the list either. So it's kind of an impossible choice for me.
Weeby, what would you go with?
Before I get to mine, let me just tell you what I asked for. Doyles, because we gave him the day off here, and this would normally be his place to come in and smack us all down and make an executive decision, because he was in the stands way back in the day. He went Metro Stars and he went Rebels and he split them. So maybe
we can't do that.
Yeah, but it's
right,
just
right off the bat.
Just as an exercise here, Charlie. Okay. Just let him have his day in the sun.
It's not helpful.
For the Metro Stars, for him, it was Mathis, Ramos, Amato, and Savarese. Gio Savarese, who hasn't got a call here, with maybe Miola and Tim Howard, who also hasn't gotten a shout, as kind of on the outside looking in, just because they split the vote as goalkeepers. And then his Red Bull one is Henri, BWP, Dax, and Robles. So he's got the Dax shout in there with JPA just on the other side. When I first started watching this league, JPA was like the guy that I was all about, who I just was so impressed by. Every time I watched him, he did something incredible. So I want to say Juan Pablo Angel, but man, I'm with you, I think, Charlie. I think just based on longevity, on wearing the armband, on doing so when they finally started winning things, even if it wasn't the ultimate prize, it's Dax. But I do feel funny about having a Mount Rushmore that's so recent for a club that has such a long history. And maybe that goes back to what you're saying, Dave, is that its history is kind of messed up in some ways, both in the sense that they took and sent players out and they didn't succeed. I mean, it was a roller coaster.
Well, I found we've tended to go with history in the Mount Rushmores. I feel like they're, you know, you say there's a recency bias. I feel like we've kind of gone the other way on a lot of these. Mm-hmm. The one that is sort of the exception to the rule and maybe the closest to that would be TFC, where we have, I think we put up a lot more, of course, of the recent guys just because of the success and titles that they were able to amass. So I think the Red Bulls fall a little closer to that. But there's still this, like, I can't get over the fact that I played against Juan Pablo Angel and saw all those things that he did. But I think if I were to be really, I think I'm now coming back around to Dax, is what I'm saying. So let's go with Dax McCarty.
I feel good about that.
You accept that logic, Dave? Or are you going to have an asterisk on this one for the Amado Guevara snub?
Yeah, of course. There's a like reason. A reason a 13-year-old went to his first MLS game and bought that. And I'm not saying that's the reason, like, that's not your whole sell, but in the stadium, which was a cavernous stadium where you were alone basically half the time, like, he was the guiding light. And yeah, JPA is great. I don't disagree with that. I think JPA stepped into what Guevara left and continued it. But he was also had Clint Mathis for a year. He had a young Josie who was coming up and starting as well at center forward. And they weren't good. I get that they went to MLS Cup in 2008, but they were the last team in the playoffs. And Dane Richards had to go off. Like, it was not a great team. Neither were Guevara's teams, but I still think the way he played connected to people. Listen, I'm not going to complain about JPA. I love JPA.
Well, we've dropped him.
I agree with everything Kalen's saying. I loved watching him play. Weeby as well. He was a guiding light for the league, all that stuff. But that's my guy.
But 10 goals, 10 respect, assists. Baby. It's not like he lit the league on
golden
fire.
Golden boot MVP.
Okay.
Charlie, that's how you pronounce those. It's pronounced golden boot MVP.
Didn't set any records. That's all I'm saying.
Here's the we'll finish it here. I think we're settled on Dax. We got 3 out of 4, and we'll let Red Bulls fans fight it out in the comment section, as they always do. Here's the not these four from Doyle. Bunakan Duel, Juninho, Rafa Marquez, and Luke Rogers. That's the joke Mount Rushmore that not being built. Now, how about best team? Which is the best team?
Can I give a quick shout out to my guy Yuri Jurkaev, just out there doing his thing?
Yeah.
No worries. For best team, it's 2015.
I remember playing that one season with him, and he was suddenly at the World Cup. I just was like watching. We had like a couple days off in Chicago to watch some matches, and I looked up and he was in the stands, and I was like, how did he get that? Like, we played this dude like 2 days ago, just probably hopped on the PJ straight to the World Cup. So
get on the Concorde jet, just straight across
the
Atlantic.
And he was also rocking Copas. He was like one of the only guys in the league that was rocking Copas. You know, in the real old school early DPs who came over, that was like, they were rocking the very comfortable footwear. That turf over at Giant Stadium wasn't so nice. So yeah, I just respect him for not going with the Mundials and the turf shoes.
Dave, you had an opinion about the best team of all time.
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious that it's 2015. It's the first year Jesse took over. And when you look, obviously they won Sporters Shield. They ran the league to an extent because it was new what they were doing. But then when you look at it individually, I think it's the group that you had Miazga breakthrough. You had Damien Perrinel, who was healthy, who was the perfect complement at center back. You had Kamar Lawrence. And then when you look at the pieces in the attack, because you had Brad, you had Sasha, but you had Lloyd Sam and you had Mike Grella, who was healthy. I think that was the best creative unit that they had over the course of the time. They had maybe Royer scores more goals. You've had players come in who maybe work harder or fit. And obviously we were all at the time, you know, Gonzalo Verón was the genius signing for the
2014
future.
season. They were pretty dynamic in the attacking half with Henri.
Yeah, but you're going to put up the Pecky era team over a Jesse team?
No, but I'm saying you just attacking.
Agreed, but then you add in Robles,
right?
Miazga, Kamar, and you've changed the defensive side.
Well, Robles was still there, but yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think he was the starter yet.
Yeah,
I could be wrong. Yeah, he was the starter.
Where's 2018 in all this with Tyler Adams and, you know, all those same guys still? And a supporter's shield and a points record, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, it didn't happen in the playoffs for them, but I mean, just on straight up.
I would go with.
You have Long.
I would go with 2015.
You have Parker.
I would go with 2015.
So would I. Yeah, I go with 2015. I think that team may have been a better pressing team, the 2018, but as far as the possession and the attack and the overall balance, I think I would go with that 2015 team.
Yep.
All right. Sounds like we have 3 out of 4. So that seems like a quorum. 2015, you are the top team in Red Bulls history. Let's go to a team that has a shorter history than the Red Bulls. NYCFC, a little way down the road, north and east at Yankee Stadium. This one, I think, is easier than the Red Bulls by far, just because you have a shorter history, but also because it's not as complicated. You start with David Villa and the MVP, and you build from there.
Yeah, easy.
Number two is Maxi Morales. Iron Man, quality as well. Hit on a DP. Then you've got kind of the cycle out of the Lampard, Pirlo's, Villas, and he continues his success. And he's the only real, well, not only, but he's the bridge between Patrick Vieira's great team and Dome's great team. So I think Maxi's the obvious number two.
Who's the top coach, Vieira or Dome? Who gets
so here? This is how I would see it. I don't know for everyone else, but Vieira was the first one to create a good team. I think everyone, whether you care or not, enjoyed the soccer his team played. And from being around him, the way he carried himself, I think changed the perception of the club and, you know, just his ability to walk in a room and like make everyone feel comfortable and project the morals that he saw in the game and the values he saw in it. I think all of that helped move the club from something new that people were unsure about to something that people could really, you know, feel like they were part of and feel passion for. So I say Vieira.
Absolutely.
Yep, agree. Okay. Yep.
Can we get players here?
Yeah.
So we got Villa and three, and Maxi, three. Right?
Three is Ring. Yeah. Three's got to be Ring.
I would go Ring,
three full seasons, captain. Vera brought him in because he's a leader, because of his quality on the pitch. He's great at breaking up plays, getting off his foot to find Morales in the final third. He's just a great example of a professional. I think it's without a doubt he's number three.
Every
and
great
he's gotten
MLS,
stronger yeah. as the seasons have gone on. Like, he's come in, he's gotten stronger, he's taken on more from a leadership perspective, and he's added more to or shown more, been able to show more of his game. We saw him last year get much more involved in the attack as far as scoring goals, making late runs into the box. We already knew his quality in possession and defensively as well, but I think his personality has only gotten stronger as the seasons have gone on. He's taken on, like, you know, that Dax McCarty, when you think of, you know, the club and the way the Red Bulls were defined through those years. Mm-hmm. I think Alex Ring is going to be the guy you think of from this crop, even though Maxi's got all the magic and those yeah. things like that. It's like the heart and soul is still with Ring.
Yeah, this is perfect too, because we've got one spot left and it obviously goes to Kwadwo Poku. So congratulations to Poku for making your way onto the Mount Rushmore. We appreciate you. We love
Didn't
you.
Anders want, he wanted
Jack Harrison.
No. I threw out Jack as a shout out.
Oh, Tommy Mack.
Tommy Mack, yeah. Tommy Mack Mix. That's who Anders wanted.
Yeah, Mix is a good one. No disrespect to Swedes out here. So we
Yeah.
Maybe Ryan Mira, local guy, first year. You got to throw that in there as well.
Or Nemich.
Adam Nemich, that's a good shout as well. Yeah. Who's the actual fourth here? Is it Sean John? Is it, I mean, his arrival?
It's between Sean John and Chanel.
I think it's Sean Johnson.
I agree.
National team, consistent. He's been vital for them, especially in last year with them being first in the East.
I thought he was goalkeeper of the year myself, but.
I really do believe it's Sean Johnson. He has three full seasons with the club now. Good in the locker room. I think he deserves to be on that Mount Rushmore.
Yeah,
Sean Johnson on the line here. Thank you so much for the honor here to be on. Sorry, I love Sean.
Can
He's
I
my
out
guy.
Sean Johnson here for a moment since you've already made fun of him? He also had the epic moment where we went and interviewed him at the training center right before one of the rivalry games. And he just goes on this long answer about how they play in Jersey. They're not real New York. Forget them, blah, blah, blah. And it was the first time we'd been to the training center. So we like finished the interview. And I'm like, hey, man, interesting getting up here. Where do you live? He goes, oh, I just moved to Hoboken. So I live in Jersey now. And I was like, you're going to give me this whole long thing about how Red Bulls aren't real because they play in Jersey. And then you're going to be like, yeah, man, I moved to Jersey. It's way easier and better now. So legend, man.
Dude,
you gotta have swag if you can.
You had to expose somebody on Mount Rushmore. Yeah. Just exposed him.
Sean Johnson. I think Jack Harrison deserves a shout just because he club's I think first draft pick, and in that first year or two when things weren't going well for them in the 7-0, I think his first appearance was in the 7-0 loss at Yankee Stadium. He came on the last couple minutes, and it was his first appearance with the club because he'd been injured, and from there he seemed to be like a fan favorite, of course, and really came into his own and then ended up going over to England. But I think he holds a special place in kind of like the spirit of the club. And was an
Pirlo
early
gets a
spot.
Shot too.
Yeah. Pirlo too. Yeah. I don't know. I did enjoy watching him do 5v2s, but he just seemed to never really switch out of 5v2 mode when he walked onto the pitch. But obviously absolute legend, all due respect. Pirlo, the god. I think Sean John, I played with Sean when he was a rookie. He came into Chicago Fire, and he honestly hasn't changed at all. He was already mature way beyond his years, a top professional. I think he's going to be around. Also, we've accounted for a couple teams of players that are already fixtures, but likely going to have a long career continuing at the club. I think he's going to be the man in net for New York City for a long time.
Agreed. I think also Jack Harrison gets the shout because it's kind of like the Mo Adu side for Toronto FC. Like, he's financing the building of this monument. You know, like, his transfer fee just goes straight into Mount Rushmore.
I don't think finances are an issue, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's always nice to get a little help. Yeah.
That's probably fair. All right, how about best team? We don't have any trophies to get on here. So this might be a combination of points, but also aesthetics. So
I think it's pretty obvious that it's last year.
That's what I was thinking.
Best team in the East.
Or 2016 as a shout.
Yeah, but I think last year, best team in the East, and for a sizable amount of the season, which is probably their crowning achievement, was like their ability to dominate the Eastern Conference. And then just too deep at every position. Probably one of the deepest teams we've ever seen in MLS, even if it wasn't as star heavy. So yeah, that would be my vote.
So then, but Dome doesn't get in. That's his side
for sure.
Okay. I'm with you on that, but I'm just saying it's we're choosing the best team and not the best manager, which is, I think, probably a first for this.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to tell Patrick he's not getting up there, you know, like when I don't want to be like, hey, Patrick, sorry, we picked Dome over you, you know, no big deal. I think
so. Here's the one thing, though, Kalen, that I'd throw in there. I get your point. They'd never been good. Yeah. And Patrick turned it into it was a laughingstock before. And then he turned it into a club.
Okay.
And so I think a lot of the Jesse Marsh, you could say, is sort of similar, although Pecky had won a trophy. But like, then he stayed and Patrick left because that was kind of what the point was and what he did. But yeah, so that.
Right. Or if we had picked the 2018 Red Bull side that Chris Armas ended up taking over during the back half of the year and, you know, was a part of that point record setting season. But also, you have to give credit to the person that helped build that infrastructure and system around it to begin with, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have to say, is Dome even there if Patrick doesn't do what he does? The way he did it and then the step he took after that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think he would come across otherwise.
Exactly.
And same, I say that about Patrick Vieira in general with a lot of the influx of foreign managers that have come over to MLS and found great success. I think Patrick was one of the first to come out and really put his everything into it and really use this experience coming to MLS. Now you see Thierry Henry coming, of course, as a way of building your managerial career and going abroad.
I think what really stood out to me about Patrick Vieira is when you were at preseason or you're at the combine or you're a place where all these coaches are together, it gets clicky. And sometimes when those big name foreign managers are around, you don't see them interacting with the other coaches. But every time you saw Patrick Vieira, he was like stuck in with Ben Olsen talking about something, or he was constantly curious and wanting to know what other people were doing and how they viewed the league. He was all in, and I really respected that from Patrick Vieira. All right, should we pick our next teams and get out of here, Dave? Do you have the randomized numbers? This is Charlie's favorite game.
Yeah. I love it.
Let me get my list out. So I will warn you, the list hasn't been redone. So like if you say a number, we've already used it. I'm just going to ignore you and move on.
Okay.
Kalen, what address? Oh, no, I don't want to do that. That would be weird. Kalen, give me a number.
Go 97.
Okay, so 1 through 22.
I went 23 and they just blasted me.
Kalen went 97. All right, Kalen, what number did you wear in high school? Did you all wear 13. 9 and 10?
No, I wore 13 all the way through.
There you go. And what a coincidence. The Chicago Fire, number 13 on the board. Okay.
All right. I was hoping the Fire. That's why I said 97. That's when the club was
well found. Well played. Nice. Charlie, I know you're very excited. So what's your number?
3.
My other number.
Okay, so number 3 is Inter Miami. Are we doing them?
No.
No.
No. Nope. Okay.
No. 6. Club legend. The Mount Rushmore. Will Trapp.
No, give me 7. Give me 7.
7 is the Seattle Sounders.
Okay.
That's a big show now.
Nice. Wow.
Chicago Fire and Seattle Sounders.
Those are two. Yeah, that's a great show.
Yeah.
Tune in.
Are we doing another one? Or are we good with 2? Let's do 2.
Let's do 3. Let's do 3.
Oh.
let's get crazy and do 3.
Anders says Anders says no 2.
How about we do 3 and then we'll just roll it over to next Thursday show?
Just Charlie, so Charlie can do the guessing game.
Fine. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Charlie, give me a number.
I've already been going through the fire stuff.
9.
We already did 9.
3.
What?
Oh, we already. Two.
We already did 2.
14.
We did 14.
12.
We just did 12. That was 16. NYCFC. Orlando.
Oh.
So next Thursday, Charlie, you get to come on with Orlando, baby.
Orlando didn't seem that happy about that one.
Bring that caca jersey.
Did you see Joseph Martinez still talking about Orlando?
Yeah. Is he on their Mount Rushmore or like...
Oh, wow.
Does he just collect all the entry fees for their Mount Rushmore? I'm just saying. 401-206-0MLS, extratimeatmlssoccer.com. Let us know what you think. Big thanks to Matt Miazga for joining us today and chatting and sharing some insight from his career in the New York Derby. And big thanks to you guys, David Goss, Kalen Carr, Charlie Davies. Keep social distancing, everybody. Stay safe, stay healthy. Do what the CDC is asking of you. We hope that you're all okay, you and your families and your friends and everybody you know. Yeah, with that, enjoy your weekend, everybody. We'll see you real soon.